Welcome to another edition of Good Gas Mondays with me, Crystal Tomlinson. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you've not subscribed as yet, just go ahead and hit the button so you'll get all the notifications when we have brand new episodes uploaded to our platform. So welcome to the second of three in our series titled Kill Fear, how we call on fear to keep us comfortable. And what we're looking at really is the habits that we have, mental habits, emotional patterns, that call on fear in the moments when we should be calling on our courage. So sometimes we want to blame circumstances and people and past hurt for why we are feeling and acting the way we are, when the truth is we've established our own mental patterns that we trigger just because we realize that courage is needed and we're not prepared to be courageous. So it's about taking responsibility for our own fear-inducing behaviors and inevitably becoming a fear killer by understanding what stands in the way of you and excellence. So we talk about these as cognitive killers. Cognitive because it's in our minds, and killers because they weaken our ability to fight fear and rise to the occasion. So today we're talking about negative projection, that habit that strengthens our fear of the unknown, or that fear of what is to come. What is negative projection? What does the science tell us? And how can you tame it? Stick around for more. So just before we jump in, I want to share with you my 60-second success tip from one of my books of the month, The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And this is good for anybody who is just building a business, you've already started your business, or maybe you already have built a successful business. There's always room to implement this one. Spend more time developing the tools than on the task. The Pareto Principle tells us that your results are based on your level of preparation, which means work smart. Don't spend too much time on the grunt effort and the hard labor, but get trained, build experience, practice your trade. 80% of your success is really dependent on 20% of your effort. So when we say work smarter, not harder, the science tells us, and all of nature seems to be based on that particular principle of success. That's our 60-second success tip. And we're going to jump right into this conversation now on negative projection. So we all know it. Projected terror, the anticipatory anxiety, which finds us literally catastrophizing our outcomes. We sit and we think of all the things that could possibly go wrong, and we tend to rest over on that side of the equation, even if we know all the things that could go right. Now, we call it many things, but perhaps the most popular characterization is that we are hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. And any responsible parent will tell you that that's the way you have to approach budgeting for the month. Yes, we expect to get paid early, and we will hope to get a lower light or energy bill this month, or a lower water bill. But we're preparing for the worst. So if the worst case scenario happens, I have to be financially prepared to handle it. We take that particular mindset not only into our financial lives, but into our intimate relationships too. And that affects our ability to trust other people and builds up a lot of resentment and even cynicism between partners. Because yes, we're hoping for the best, that our partners are being faithful and honest and are as committed to the relationship as we are. But then we seem to be preparing for the worst. Do we have a separate bank account, which in Jamaica we would describe that as our get vex money. So just in case we have a falling out, I have my little money over here and I can take care of myself. So we are preparing for the worst possible outcomes. Prenuptial agreements are the perfect piece of evidence to show what we are willing to do when we're not sure what the outcome is going to be, but we're trying to prepare for it. Our minds tend to run to the worst case scenario, but those scenarios hardly ever happen. It is really a function of evolution which once had its place in preserving human life, but it's that function of evolution of looking out for all the things that could go wrong in our environment and trying to be as prepared as possible, lest we die. So the problem is that we're looking to establish control of circumstances in an era, in a millennium, where a lot of the harms and dangers that once plagued our forefathers no longer exist. So we don't need to be as conscious about what birds are in close proximity to our huts, because we know that those birds aren't carrying life-threatening diseases. We have clean water sources, and so we don't have to be too antsy about whether or not we drink from this river or from that stream. So we're carrying that primitive habit into a not so primitive society, and that is causing quite a bit of emotional difficulty and strain for us. So the problem is we're looking to establish control of circumstances and outcomes when we really can't. So a fear of economic recessions, of societal changes, of a job loss, of personal loss, of election results, of retirement planning, health problems, all of those things are unknown variables. And we will stand where we are and negatively project what the possible outcomes could be should any of these things happen. What if I get fired from my job today? I have no money. I can't make the car payments. I won't be able to complete payments on my debt and my student loans and to invest properly in my healthcare or this new business idea. And so I need to keep this job no matter what. You're projecting so negatively, perhaps in response to the question, do I want to challenge my boss on this idea? No, I don't. Because if I lose this job, all of these things could be a possible outcome. We don't think that by challenging the boss on an idea, by correcting somebody who is misinformed or sharing your opinion in a way that conflicts with the larger opinion, that maybe somebody will say, you're right. That's a good idea. Or even if they don't say it's a good idea, that the worst, which is that you might lose your job, just might not happen. And so we convince ourselves of these worst possible outcomes. And in the moment when we are meant to do something bold and courageous, we just don't bother. So we must accept that we are not clairvoyant. We have no skill and no capacity to see what the next step really holds for us. The obligation then on the individual is to make sure that the decisions you make in the present and in the now are true to, one, the amount of information you have available, because you only know what you know when you know it. And you can only make decisions based on the amount of information you have available right now. So the hope is that when you decide in your present, it must be using the information you have available right now to make the best possible choice. So when tomorrow comes and there is new information available, you don't say, oh crap, I really shouldn't have done this. But you couldn't have done any better than you did, because you only knew what you knew when you knew it. You're human. You're not clairvoyant. So if we accept that, then it removes a little bit of anxiety from the ideas and the projections that we have about what could come in the future. If we remove the responsibility from ourselves to know all that could be, then we're able to guilt-free yet responsibly make decisions in the now based on what we know. But outside of that thrust to try and solve the problems now, there's also the truth that we could be resisting change, and we really shouldn't. The brain prefers predictable negative consequences over uncertain outcomes. Let's just go over that again. Your brain prefers, it will choose, it is more comfortable with a negative consequence than it is with an uncertain outcome. Which means that you could be in a relationship right now with very clear and predictable negative consequences. It is perhaps an unhealthy emotional space for you, a physically abusive space for you, or a dead end. And we know that, but we prefer that over the uncertain outcome of breaking up with this individual and living life as a single man or woman for a few months or even years. Your brain prefers that you stay in that scenario that guarantees a negative outcome than to take a risk and pursue an uncertain outcome. But as a paradox of change, as a society, we are worshiping progress. We love to see the new opportunities, the improvement in technology, in business, in transportation, in finance, in healthcare. But unconsciously, we all believe that the old equals good. So there's a lot of science to buttress that assertion that we believe longevity, however long something has been happening, is a good thing. It's a marker that it is a good thing. And so being in a relationship for 8, 9, 10 years, the longevity of the relationships, we use that to tell ourselves that it's a good thing. So we associate lifespan with higher quality, even though tradition gets us stuck more times than not. So according to research, the longer something is thought to exist, the better it is perceived. One particular tree, and this was the research conducted, one particular tree described as being 4,500 years old got more positive reviews than when people were told it was just 500 years old. The same thing happened when they compared two pieces of chocolate. One was portrayed as the first to be sold in its region 73 years ago. The other, 3 years old. Though it was the same chocolate, can you guess which one got a 5-star rating? We like longevity, and so the longer we've been doing something, whether the outcomes are good or bad, we will prefer to continue doing that something. But resisting change makes things worse. I'm sure you've heard the adage, whatever you resist, persists. Pushing back against a thing causes that thing to push back on you. So resisting change, and we've seen it from the development and growth in our society, resisting change doesn't mean change is not going to come. It comes anyway. The question is, are you prepared for it? Now, when it comes to dealing with change, the research also indicates that there are three primary emotions that we experience. Cynicism, which is a distrust of others and their motives. Fear, which is the belief that we are or might be put in danger. And acceptance. The first two are strongly negative and the latter is vaguely positive. And when people were asked during the research to indicate what emotions they experience during phases of change, no strong positive feelings made it to the top of the list. And so we're dealing in large part with a negative set of emotions whenever we think about changing our life circumstances. David McRaney, he's the author of You Are Not So Smart, said that the brain seems wired to want to resolve the unknowns. And when the brain is facing uncertainty, it wants to create certainty. So driven by that need to solve the problem and ease the tension, your brain is going to default to the easiest, fastest, and least painful option, which is something that it's certain about. So you don't choose the best option. You end up staying in your comfort zone. And that is a big problem, especially when you're dealing with the need to take bold action. We all have desires and passions and dreams that we would love to pursue. We envision on our best days a life less than ordinary, a life that is closer to excellence and to high achievement. We all desire it, but we know that to move from where we are to where we need to be will require change, a change in our habits, a change in our patterns and behaviors, whether mental patterns and behaviors or those things we act out on a daily basis. We're going to need to change the way we talk about ourselves. We have to change our relationships and the nature that we build relationships in. A lot of things will have to change. Our spending habits, our leisure habits, whether we read or don't read, how we invest or don't invest in ourselves. All those things will have to change. And because The brain is more likely to resist the change. We have to find ways to give us the bravery and the boldness to kill that fear of the unknown, especially when it locks us out of the arena of excellence. Understanding that the anticipation of an outcome can cause more damage than the outcome itself, it's important that we figure out how to deal with change and the anxious anticipation that will generate itself inside our minds. Dealing with change is going to require that you open yourself up to uncertainty. You have to be willing to embrace the unknown and take things one step at a time. It doesn't mean you don't have a broader vision for your life. It doesn't mean that you don't expect a positive outcome and these kinds of payoffs at the end of a particular activity. But your real obsession should be with the quality of the effort that you're going to put into that activity. It's important that we learn to set value-based goals as opposed to outcome-based goals. That way, we don't get obsessed with the outcome. We get obsessed with the value of the effort that we put into the activity. So let me give you an example. If you're a college student and you're planning on how you're going to win at university life, it's important that the win and the victory is based in values and not outcomes. So instead of being anxious about getting a first class honors or a 4.0 GPA or securing a scholarship, be obsessed with the quality of the effort that you're going to put in. So are you going to put the value and the obsession on studying 3 or 4 nights a week for 4 hours? That way, whether or not you get the 4.0, whether or not you get the scholarship, whether or not you get the first class honors, you're going to stand very proud to talk about the amount and the quality of discipline and commitment that you applied on that journey. You have no control of the outcome. And I'll tell you quickly my own story. I had that outcome-based vision for my university experience. I wanted a first-class honors. I was aiming for it. I was batting for it. I was planning to brag about it. And in my final semester, I wrote down the wrong date for one of my examinations, and I slept right through the exam. And that particular exam, I was very prepared for. That was an A waiting to happen. But I wrote the wrong date down. So let's say the examination was on Monday the 25th. I wrote Monday the 26th. And so when I saw the date in my book, I said, well, Monday is the 25th. So if I put on the 26th, it must mean that I saw the 26th. It's actually Tuesday. And so at Monday, when the exam was actually being done, I was asleep. And I had to spend an extra semester completing my first degree because I had to do that course over. Still got the A, but I missed the first class honors because one requirement is that you must complete the degree within the 3 years that it's assigned to you. So having done an extra semester, there was no way I could have gotten that first class honors. Now, it was very discouraging for me. I was disappointed. I did not get to graduate with the same batch of students that I came to university with. And It was a little heartbreaking, but I realized after a very brief moment of depression, I won't pretend that it was months of me being depressed, but after that feeling of, you know, failing at something and disappointing myself and missing my target and not getting to the goal, I realized that I still had fantastic grades. And had it not been for that little hiccup, I could have gotten it. So it's not that the outcome was beyond me, but the circumstances will change on you. And it doesn't mean the effort that you've put in is not valuable and worth celebrating. And so you have to put that emphasis and obsession onto the values that should guide you and not necessarily the outcome that you're seeking. And I'll say it again, doesn't mean you won't try to aim and hit for a noble goal. But your obsession is really with the quality of the effort and the discipline that you're going to commit to that process. So accept the uncertainty, embrace the unknown, take it one step at a time, and use that value-based system for goal setting and effort measurement instead of the outcome-based. Another solution that you can use is your baby face. And I've written about it, rather, in the book, Kill Fear, The Art of Courageous Living. We must learn to go back to our baby stages and put on that baby face when we're about to do something different. One of the things children never get too worried about is how they look to others when they're trying a new thing. A child who's trying to talk isn't worried about sounding stupid to the people who can already talk. A child who's trying to walk isn't worried about how many people will laugh as he or she bumps into the table or lands flat on their butt over and over again as their knees buckle trying to put one foot in front of the other. They aren't worried about what the effort will look like. They aren't worried about what people will think when they've gotten to the outcome that they're pursuing, whether they are speaking perfectly or if they speak with a lisp, whether they're walking perfectly or the knees are buckling and shaking and they're staggering. They're very focused on attempting over and over and over again to get it right. They literally learn to take life one step at a time. That particular lesson we have all learned because we've all been babies. So we've done it before and we can do it again. Learn to focus on the effort and the learning of a thing as opposed to how others will view you while you learn. You have no control over what will be said as you try. You have no control over how that pursuit and the effort will look even as you try. It will be difficult. It will be hard. It will take you a very long time. But put your baby face on and keep going. The other tip and tool that you can use is to reframe that failure as earned wisdom. You see, you don't get wisdom from reading things in a book. You get wisdom from trying it and learning the lesson. And then applying that lesson now, which is proof of your wisdom, to any other pursuit. So don't focus too much on the fact that you have failed at a thing. Find the lessons along that journey, even inside the failure, and allow it to be a nugget of wisdom that you can transfer into other areas of your life. Fourthly, become more curious and less certain. Become more willing to find answers than to give answers. The more curious you are about life, about the things that you can learn, about experiences, it's the less obsessed you will be with trying to find certainty and surety and knowingness. Release that obligation from your spirit and walk into the world with more questions than you have. Answers. Finally, start small and build momentum. Sometimes we look at the big picture and we know we don't have the stomach to eat all of it. Cut it into small bites and slowly start to eat away at it. That helps you to build momentum as you bite one piece and digest it. You bite another piece, you digest it. Eventually, you start to see that big picture crumbling under the weight of your small, consistent, and disciplined effort. And that helps you to build the confidence, build the rhythm and the habit of executing in that particular space, and the momentum you need to keep going. One of the things we have to learn to prove to ourselves as we approach the big darkness that is the unknown is that we have the ability to get it right. And the more you do, it's the more you prove to you that you can get it right. But it takes the action. It takes a proof point. And you don't get a proof point unless you've taken the action. So start small and show you that you have what it takes to get this thing done. Curiosity will conquer fear even more than bravery will. So if you take anything from this particular talk, I want you to pull on that solution that says, be more curious and less certain. Thank you so much for listening to this week's edition of Good Gas Mondays with me, Christelle Tomlinson. I hope this episode has been useful for you. And if you don't find use for it yet, when the moment comes, call on it. If you have a friend who you think could benefit from hearing this message, please go ahead and share the podcast with them. Share it and let them know that you found a way to help them to kill a fear that could be keeping them away from their next level of excellence. If you're interested in buying my book, Kill Fear, The Art of Courageous Living, please send me an email at killfearnow@gmail.com, or you could jump right on ahead on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and purchase your book today. It's been a pleasure feeding your spirit with ideas on emotional health and wellness. I'll see you here next week. We're going to talk more about you and all the things you need to cleanse, strengthen, and accelerate that emotional space. Blessings.